Thank you again, Mr. Booth. Just happened to pop into my mind to make this comment. I don't know how you feel, but I remember several years ago when laptops came out, and then shortly after laptops, things became more compact, and tablets came out, and I remember seeing the first gentleman come up before the congregation, and typically it was a young guy. Doesn't apply in this case. But he would have a tablet instead of his Bible, and he was using his tablet, and it kind of made me go, what? You're not taking your Bible up there? But I hope it doesn't bother you that I use my tablet. I used to bring both, and that became very clumsy up here on the smaller lecterns, and now I've just resorted to the tablet. And it's really beneficial from the speaker standpoint because I can quickly move from two different translations or three different translations as I'm giving my message. But I also kind of miss having the Bible here as well, but I got to do what is most effective for me. So I hope you're fine with me bringing the tablet up here instead of an official Bible. Actually, it's an official Bible. It's not a fake Bible that I'm reading from, but you know what I mean. Also appreciated Mr. Snyder's sermon today, and it's amazing how God guides and directs the messages that are to be given for you. And it's not for us. I mean, yeah, they are for us, but primarily the message is for his people. And Mr. Snyder and I did not discuss our topics, but you'll see as I get into my message, they are incredibly overlapping today. So I just wanted to draw your attention to that, and that God is looking out for us all. From time to time, life can have us standing on what seems to be the edge of helplessness. The edge of helplessness. And I specifically mean helplessness rather than hopelessness. It's a point in time when things are so difficult in your life that you don't know what to do. It's when you feel like you've done everything that is humanly possible and you still can't find the answers on how to resolve the problem that's in front of you. It's almost like you're standing on the edge of a cliff and you're looking down and you have nowhere to go forward and behind you is a wall. That's what standing on the edge of helplessness is like. It's when you're in desperate need of help and you're looking everywhere for it, but yet help is nowhere in sight. You could feel all alone during this period of time, and you could also be filled with anxiety. I think, as Mr. Snyder mentioned, we've all been there a time or two in our life. There's a lot of things that can trigger this kind of feeling in our mind. It might be financial trouble. It might be relationship trouble. It might be a loss of a spouse. It's a very difficult thing to go through in life when you lose a spouse. Or maybe even someone a little more distant in your relationship, a loved one, when you lose them, that can be a very tough situation. It might also be a health problem, or maybe even a job problem. There's a number of very important areas of our life where we can end up finding ourselves on what seems to be the edge of helplessness. This situation is not rare among God's people. God's people down through time, throughout His Word, have found themselves at times on the edge of helplessness with a wall to their back and not sure what to do or how to resolve the difficulty. Today I would like to look at a few examples when God's people were standing on this edge of helplessness, and we'll see God's instruction on how to deal with that time in your life, and it will give us all direction when we find ourselves at that point. The title for my sermon is The Edge of Helplessness. The Edge of Helplessness. So as I said, I do want to go through three primary examples today in my sermon, and you'll see situations where, as I mentioned, God's people have found themselves in a situation where it looks like they are standing on the edge of helplessness. The first one I want to look to is the Israelites at the Red Sea. If you would turn to Exodus chapter 14. Exodus chapter 14. And we'll pick up the story in verse 5. I think most of the scriptures I'll turn to today will be from the New King James Version of the Bible. Exodus chapter 14, verse 5. It says, "Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, 'Why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us?' So he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. Also he took 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt with captains over every one of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with boldness. So the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them, camping by the sea beside Pi Hiroth, before Baal Zephon." Verse 10, "And when the Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord." So the Israelites find themselves stuck on this edge of feeling helpless. In front of them was the Red Sea, and behind them were the Egyptians pursuing rapidly after them. And what was the first thing that they did? They became filled with fear. It said in verse 10, it says, "So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord." There's nothing wrong with crying out to the Lord, but the first thing that we learn here in this example of what is what not to do, and that is to be filled with fear. They were filled with fear when they saw the sea before them and the Egyptians pursuing them from behind. Let's go on and read verse 11, the next verse. It says, "Then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, you have taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt?'" So they find what they think is their impending doom, and they become full of fear, and what's the next thing that they do? Again, this is a lesson of what we don't want to do when we're found, when we find ourselves in this situation. They looked to point a finger, to blame Moses. So the two things that we don't want to do is become filled with fear and to blame others for the problems that stand in front of us. When it seems help is far off and when troubles seem to be overwhelming and our anxiety is high, it is very easy and common to blame others for our problems. It can even be very common for a person to blame God, to point their finger to God. Let's continue on in verse 12. Exodus chapter 14, verse 12 says, "Is this not the word that we have told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve Egyptians than it would have, than that we should die in the wilderness." So now they've actually not just blamed Moses, but they've blamed God because God is the one that essentially took them out of Egypt. If we're not careful, if we don't keep our emotions under control, we can find ourselves blaming God and maybe not actually uttering the words, possibly uttering the words, but saying, "My life would have been better had you not called me." Those are very dangerous and wrong thoughts to have when you're faced with a difficult situation in your life. But that's essentially what the Israelites were doing here when they were standing on what seemed to them to be the edge of helplessness. Let's jump down to verse 15. It says, "And the Lord said to Moses, Why do you cry to me? So now he's talking directly to Moses. He's talking to Moses. He said, why do you cry to me? He's not saying, why are your people, the Israelites, crying to me? He's talking to Moses. I think God can somewhat understand the Israelites' perspective, maybe a little bit, but he didn't expect that to be Moses' reaction of crying out in fear and afraid of what is in front of him. Because God, and of course, and it's Jesus Christ here talking to Moses, he just showed him incredible miracles. Moses was witness to incredible things relating to God's power and his might and his strength and what he is certainly capable and able to do. Verse 15 again, the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry out to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. There's another reason why Jesus Christ asked him this question. Back up to verse 1 of the same chapter. What does it say in verse 1? God told Moses that this was going to happen. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea opposite Baal Siphon. You shall camp before it by the sea. For the Pharaoh will say to the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue after them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh, over all of his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. It's amazing. Jesus Christ, the Lord, God told Moses that this is my plan. I'm going to completely punish the Egyptians for what they did. I'm going to give you complete victory over them. He told Moses that this was going to take place before it even happened. And yet Moses still found himself in the same boat, crying out to God, asking, what are we going to do? Now let's look at some instructions on what we should do when we're faced in this situation. Verse 13. Exodus 14, verse 13. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Don't allow fear to come into your heart. That's the number one thing when you're faced with what seems to be a helplessness situation, is don't let fear enter and control your thoughts, because it will try to. Human nature naturally gravitates towards fear when faced with difficult situations. God designed it that way. It protects us from harm when we're faced with difficult situations. But as a Christian, you have to be in control of your emotions. Very important in life. Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. So Moses knew what was going to happen to the Egyptians. The big problem with fear is when we allow it to dominate and control our minds, and thereby we make decisions in our life with fear in our minds, is it removes all opportunity for faith. Fear takes away faith completely from our life. God told Moses and the Israelites to stand still, to stop what you're doing, control yourself, and see the saving hand of Jesus Christ. He wants his people, all of us, when we're standing in what seems to be a helpless situation, to be at peace and to turn our troubles over to Jesus Christ completely. Let's go to John chapter 14, verse 17. If I said verse 17, I meant verse 27. John 14, verse 27. This is Jesus Christ speaking here. It's the same Jesus Christ that just gave Moses and the Israelites instruction on how to deal with their difficulty. Verse 27 says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, and neither let it be afraid." Jesus Christ wants us to live our life that way. Because He knew that there's going to be times, sometimes many times, when we're going to be faced in very difficult situations. And He wants us to know how to handle them and to make it through spiritually. We may not make it through all of our battles physically. In fact, we know that we won't, because physically our life has an ending point at some time. But spiritually is the important thing, that we make it through the tough times. Jesus Christ said, "Be at peace. Do not let your heart be troubled. Do not be afraid." When it comes to helping us with our trials, what's harder for God? Removing our trial or spreading the Red Sea? What's harder for God? He certainly did that. He parted the Red Sea. He can certainly handle our trials. I'd like to take credit for that quote, but I actually heard that in a sermon at the teen camp one year. I thought it was a really good perspective. The second situation I'd like to look at is in Genesis chapter 22. This story, and we'll begin in verse 1. This story is an amazing story to me. I can't envision putting myself in Abraham's shoes here, but it has to deal with Abraham receiving instruction from God that he was to go and sacrifice Isaac. It's an incredible story of control, self-control, of closeness to God, of faith in God, and an incredible story of also remembering God's promises. God's instruction to Abraham was very clear, but it was also extremely difficult to receive. Most of us, and I speak for myself, if I was faced with this, I'd be filled with fear. I know I would, at least initially. I'd have doubt, and I'd have anxiety, and I would want to give way to human reasoning, to try to figure out a way out of this difficulty, out of this problem. Let's begin reading in verse 1. Genesis chapter 22. "Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, 'Abraham,' and he said, 'Here I am.' And then he said, 'Take now your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you.' So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place which God had told him." So you know this has to be just consuming the mind of Abraham and what he had to do. He had to split the wood and do all the preparation for this moment of sacrificing his one and only son. Verse 4, "Then on the third day," so Abraham's been dealing with this and thinking about it, processing it, for 3 days at this point, "Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off." That had to be the moment of dread, because you knew you were coming very close to that time when you had to sacrifice your son. I think I probably would have been walking extremely slowly on that journey, trying to avoid it. Verse 5, "And Abraham said to his young men, 'Stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you.' So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, 'My father,' and he said, 'Here I am, my son.' Then he said, 'Look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?'" At this point, I would probably collapse. It would be just so hard to answer that question. But Abraham and his closeness to God and God guiding and directing him gave Abraham the proper answer. And Abraham said, verse 8, and Abraham said, "My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering." So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place which God had told him. And Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham, verse 10, and Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Very tough. Very tough situation to be in. At that time, Abraham had to be filled with emotion and at the same time praying to God for strength, for help, for control of his emotions so that he could fulfill God's command to him. We are all faced with possibilities similar to this, where things are very tough, where you're faced with a very difficult decision of obeying God or possibly disobeying God. There might even have been times in the past where you were faced with possibly losing your job because of the Sabbath day. And you had to make a decision. I've got my kids and my wife that are dependent upon me to eat and to have our home and pay the rent or the mortgage. And my boss only wants me to work a few hours on Saturday. And I could probably still make it to church. Those kind of human reasonings and thoughts pop into our head. But as Christians and those that are called by God, His command to us is very clear on what we are to do. The same scenario might play out in the saving of our first or second tithe. Sometimes these are very difficult decisions. But just as God told and inspired Abraham to tell Isaac, God will provide the lamb. He will take care. He will be our provider. The Lord will 100% provide. Let's continue reading on the story. Verse 11. But the angel of the Lord called him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." So he said, "Here I am." At that point, Abraham had to just have complete relief flow over his body. And he said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, "The Lord will provide." That's the important thing that we have to take away from this story, is that God is our provider. He will take care of us. He may wait in our own personal lives until we follow His command all the way to raising our hand, just as Abraham did. It may end sooner. It's up to God. He knows the perfect timing for all things. But when God was looking down upon Abraham, He knew when Abraham raised his arm that that was the hardest point of coming to sacrificing his son. And He knew that he did it. And He knew that in his heart he was going to obey God 100% no matter what happened after that. It's a tough situation to be in. But the important thing is for us to take away from this story is to realize that God will provide for us. So how was Abraham able to accomplish this? What gave him the strength as he was standing there with his son bound, laying upon the stack of wood? What gave him the strength to go ahead and take the knife and to raise his hand? I believe because he, throughout this entire difficult time, kept telling himself what God had promised him. He remembered the promises from God. What was that promise that God gave Abraham? Well, let's look back and find out. Genesis chapter 17. Verse 19. God told Abraham his plan. Just as he told Moses as they were being faced with this very difficult situation of being cornered in. God told Abraham his plan for Isaac. Verse 19 of Genesis 17. Then God said, "Know, Sarah, your wife shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him." You see, God made Abraham a promise that Isaac would have descendants. Isaac, when Abraham was preparing to sacrifice him, was a young boy. He didn't have descendants. He didn't have any kids yet. Abraham knew what God's promises were for Isaac. And I believe that he fully kept telling himself and reminding himself of the promises from God for Isaac. It gave him strength. We need to take that lesson away from this story for us. When we're faced with that moment of help, what seems to be helplessness, remember God's promises. And what are God's promises to each of us? Well, there are many. God's whole word is filled with promises to his people. But let's look at some that we can never afford to forget. Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 8. We need to carry this verse with us every day of our life. Because we may never know the moment that we need to have this in mind. Deuteronomy 31, verse 8. Says, "And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you." You see, we follow Jesus Christ. He goes before us. He's blazing the path for us that we're to follow in our life. It continues, "He will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you." And again, a very important concept, do not fear or be dismayed or be discouraged. Do not fear and do not be discouraged. The author of Hebrews quotes this same verse, and if you'd like it for your notes, it's Hebrews 13, verse 5. It says, "He will never leave us or forsake us." So the overall lesson here is when you're stuck in that difficult place, number one, first and foremost, continue your obedience to God. When you're stuck and you're at a point of what seems to be helpless, continue in obedience to God, no matter what you're facing. And secondly, never forget God's promise to you that He is there, leading the way, by your side, helping you all the way through the process. The third story I'd like to look at today from the Bible is, again, a very powerful and amazing story of resilience by God's people. And it has to do with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel chapter 3, if we could turn there. Daniel chapter 3. Begin reading in verse 12. "As you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would not fall down and worship the gold image of King Nebuchadnezzar, nor would they worship his gods." No doubt, he probably had many. Let's go ahead and begin reading in verse 12, Daniel chapter 3. "There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up?" Verse 15, he gives them one last chance to prove that they will honor his gods and his gold image. The king says in verse 15, "Now if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Pretty dire situation there for these three young men. It's pretty much laid out in front of them on what their fate was going to be. They did not fall down and disobey God and worship these false gods in this image. So what did they do? What was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's answer to the king? Verse 16. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter.'" In other words, what they're trying to tell this king here is, we don't even have to think about this. You already know how we feel on this. The report has already come to you. There's no need for us to deliberate or to think about what you proposed. There's no need for us to answer you any further in this matter. In other words, it's closed. You know how we feel about this. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, without hesitation, were very decisive in choosing to obey God, even if it cost them their life. Very decisive. When faced with what seems to be a helpless situation, we must be decisive when it comes to obeying God. Where we say, no, this is what I'm going to do. This is what's right. I'm going to move forward in complete obedience to God. Without hesitation. We don't step back. We don't call time out. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't say, "Oh, hey guys, maybe we should talk about this for a minute. I may have an idea here that can get us out of this and please the king and still obey God." None of that happened. There was no time out called to discuss the best direction here. It didn't matter what the penalty was. They were to move forward in complete obedience to God. How could they do that? How could they do that without even stopping to think about what was in front of them? Because they knew the law of God. They knew that it was completely against God's law to fall down to an image and offer worship to it. And they lived it every day up to this point of trial. They didn't live their life halfway in the world and halfway in obedience to God. Halfway in sin, halfway in obedience to God. They lived their life completely every day in line. And then when this trial hit, they were ready to deal with it, as we heard in the first split sermon, head on. Head on, right into it. Not sideways, not kind of walking halfway, pleasing the king and pleasing God. Because we'll never please the kings of this world and please God at the same time. We must be decisive when it comes to the question of obeying God or not obeying God. Let's continue reading verse 17, Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, verse 17 says, "If that is the case," meaning they'll be cast into the fire, "our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king." Very bold, very full of faith in what God's ability is to do. They told the king, if you cast us into the fire, it won't matter if it's God's will that we live through it. Verse 18. Of course, they also knew that there's a chance they could die. There was a chance that they could die at the same time. Verse 18, "But if not," meaning if not, if they don't live, "let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you set up." Again, very bold in their faith, very bold in their approach to this king, respectful, yes, but bold to the king, saying, we will not disobey our God and fall down to your false images. Going on in verse 19, it says, then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and he spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in this army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and other garments and were cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's pretty hot. That's pretty hot when the flames jump out and devour those that are throwing Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into this furnace. It's also a very powerful statement from God that what they intended to do to His holy people, these three men. Verse 23, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to the counselors, did we not cast three men bound in the midst of the fire? And they answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. And then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire. The satraps and administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were the garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. It's an incredible display of God's magnificent power and His might. We can never forget this in our life. We can't afford to. When we are at that edge of what seems to be helplessness, we need to remember God's promises and His power and His might for us. It's amazing how this event even changed the heart of Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 28. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent His angels and delivered His servants who trusted in Him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. As astonished as Nebuchadnezzar was, I think he just considered that another God on the same equality of his gods, except their God was a little bit more powerful. He did recognize that. That's the problem when you have so many gods around you, and Nebuchadnezzar certainly did. He created gods for everything. He just felt like this was just another god that he'd never heard of or become witness to before. But what a tough situation for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. No doubt before they were cast into that fiery furnace, they could see the flames. Probably they could feel the heat if it was heated 7 times its normal temperature. And yet, they completely trusted in God the Father and Jesus Christ to help them, to be there with them, and to guide them and direct them. So when we're standing on the edge of what seems to be a helpless situation, always remember that in reality, it's not a helpless situation. Everything that we deal with, God is able to deliver us from and to help us through. And He promises to do that. We actually, God tells us in Scripture, that we are in the palm of God's right hand. Let's look at that. Isaiah chapter 41. Isaiah chapter 41, verse 10. Here in this Scripture, again, God addresses the idea of fear. Isaiah 41, verse 10. Fear not, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, which is another word for discouraged. Do not be dismayed or discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. See, it even comes out saying here, I am your helper. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. He says, I'm going to reach down, I'm going to take you into my hand, and I will bring you through whatever you're facing. John chapter 10, verse 27. John chapter 10, verses 27 through verse 30. This is a message from Jesus Christ to each and every one of you and to me. Verse 27. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. Neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. See, so Jesus Christ is saying that you are secure in his hand. He's speaking of your eternal life. You are secure in his hand. Verse 29, my Father who has given them to me is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and my Father are one. So Jesus Christ and God the Father are there for us every day of our life. It doesn't matter what we're facing. It doesn't matter how helpless it seems to us from a physical standpoint. God and Jesus Christ are there with you every day. They hold you in their hand, and they hear your prayers, and they know what you're feeling. But we need to keep our focus to always obey God, to be decisive when we're faced with the possibility to compromise in our obedience to God. And we need to walk forward and have full faith that God will deliver us no matter what we're facing. Hope the rest of your Sabbath day is very special.